Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Talking Hockey Sense. I'm Chris Peters. It's episode 112 of the podcast, and it is NCAA tournament time. And we got a great show for you today. Got a guest for you. We'll be bringing on in just a second to help me preview the 2024 men's NCAA hockey tournament. But before we do that, just want to remind you, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to this podcast on your app of choice and make sure that you are signed up for all of the updates that you can get on YouTube, on flowhockey.tv. You can find this podcast in a variety of ways. Want to make sure you get that. And also, please leave a kind rating and review. And also, make sure you're subscribed to flowhockey.tv. We've got the ECHL playoffs coming your way. The Kelly Cup is on the line very soon. Also, the USHL and the Clark Cup playoffs and many junior leagues across the United States and Canada wrapping up their season. So make sure you are signed up for that. But without further ado, I am so excited to bring in my guest today. He is Mike McMahon, publisher of collegehockeyinsider.com and also writes for College Hockey News. He is one of the foremost college hockey experts on the internet. If you're not following him, do so at Mike McMahon, CHN. And Mike, welcome to Talking Hockey Sense for the first time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This should be fun. It's the best time of year. Probably the busiest time of year, but the best time of year.
No question about it. You and I both probably not sleeping a lot right now, which is the way we like it, because it's college hockey playoffs. It is the NCAA tournament. And Mike, one of the big reasons I had you on is because, you know, we've had Brad Schlossman on a whole bunch of times, but you have been covering, you know, a lot of Hockey East for the majority of your college hockey writing career. And it seems like the balance of power is really in the East this year. The top two seeds, Boston College and Boston University, 1 and 2 respectively. And, you know, you've had a chance to kind of see it up close and see the dominance of those two teams. So before we get into the whole tournament preview, I just thought, you know, what's it been like kind of following those two teams and Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith, who you just wrote about, and, you know, Cutter Gauthier? I mean, it's pretty remarkable to see the strength of those two teams this season.
It really is. And you never really know how the freshmen in particular are going to perform. I think we've gotten a better idea of it over the last couple of years, really almost a decade ago, when Jack Eichel had the type of freshman year he had, and then Kyle Connor did. Obviously, lately it was Fantilli and Logan Cooley. Those types of players, those real top-end picks that come in and make an immediate impact, whether they're 17 years old like Macklin Celebrini or whether they're true 18-year-old freshmen like Gauthier did last year, Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, Gabe Perreault. It's really been impressive what those two teams have done this year, BC and BU, because they are so young. But, you know, at the end of the day, like it's also what we're starting to see. I think when you're seeing these top players come into college hockey, they're having big immediate impacts the way that these guys have this year.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think that the interesting thing is there's been this school of thought that the, you know, the balance of power is in the the balance of power is basically to the upperclassmen, or, you know, the teams that are older are going to be the ones that compete. However, throughout this, and really we're going to kind of find that out, but I think as we looked into the conference tournaments, as you see how kind of things played out there, you know, the freshmen really still rule the roost. I mean, Will Smith had 9 points in the last two games of the Hockey East tournament, and you know, it goes MVP. And now all of a sudden we're talking about a completely different Hobie Baker discussion than we were having a week ago, which is just remarkable to see. So the interesting thing is based on what you've seen this year, can the young teams that, you know, the school of thought has been, you need the experience to win, but can these younger teams find a way to do it?
I think they can. I think they can, particularly because of the way that they play and because of some of their goaltenders. Like, the older teams still have some of an advantage. It depends on who you are. I think there are some of those teams that can still be competitive by recruiting older players. But I think when you've got players as skilled as those guys, as like the three BC freshmen or as Macklin Celebrini, but also just the way that they play off the puck, they're creating space all over the rink. It becomes really difficult to contain those guys. The ones that have been able to sometimes over the course of the year have been those older teams. I watched BC a couple of times, including just about a month ago, against a team like Merrimack, which is an older, heavier team that gave them some problems over the course of the game. Now, BC still scored 6 goals, won the game 6-4, but it wasn't necessarily a runaway blowout like it has been against some other teams this year for BC. So there is that component, I think, where you can slow them down with older, more experienced, heavier guys. But at some point, it seems like, especially with this group that BC has, the skill just comes through in the end. I think that's what we saw this weekend, was the skill coming through in the end, and there's a lot of it. Whether it's
no question.
Anybody on that top line or Gauthier, who still – we forget sometimes that Gauthier is only a sophomore.
Only a sophomore and 35 goals. I mean, you know, the rarity of 30 goal scorers in college hockey, and to see the way that he scored, and then, you know, Macklin celebrated. It stunned me that BC hadn't had a 30 goals, or BU, sorry, didn't have a 30 goal scorer, what, since Chris Drury? So it's like that's, it's nuts to me. So, you know, like that's, yeah, these younger players are making this impact. But it'll be interesting because we have seen, you know, BU, they had a tough time against Cornell, which is a heavier team and typically a team that can throw the body around, and they're going to be in this tournament. And so there are a lot of things like that. So before we're going to go regional by regional, but before we do that, just a couple of things. Like, I think there was a lot of conversation about the, how the regionals were set up, and obviously BU being the number 2 overall seed has to go all the way to Sioux Falls for their tournament. And that's basically UMass's fault. Is it not?
It is. Yeah, it is. They have a rule where if you're a host, you have to play in your host regional. Right. That's part of the reward you get for, I'd say volunteering, but bidding to host. And then also you can't have intra-conference matchups in the first round. So they didn't have a choice there. They had to send BU West because UMass had to be in Springfield, and BC was the number 1 overall seed. So they get the priority to go to Providence over BU. There's a debate on whether or not that should change. I think it should. I'm not a proponent of going completely on campus, but there are, you know, changes to the regional system that I would make to help balance that a little bit better, this being one of them. And it is, you know, Murphy's Law. It's the way that it works out. But David Carl, the head coach of Denver, has been one of the biggest proponents of going to on-campus regionals. And, of course, who does UMass draw in the first round? Denver. So Denver's got to travel across country as a 1 seed to effectively have a road game. Whereas BU travels west, and so not, and UMass kind of gets the benefit of not only staying at home, but getting a relative home game. It's about 20 minutes away from their campus against Denver. So it does feel like things should probably change to prevent things like that from happening. But for now, that the rules are what they are.
Yeah, they are, and that's the thing. Is like, you know, what else were they really going to do? I didn't have, you know, there was a kind of a bit of an uproar, and I didn't really have a problem with it, because I mean, the other thing that happened was, North Dakota has to go, instead of going to South Dakota, which would be the closer of the regionals, they're going to Maryland Heights. And Maryland Heights is a 2,500 seat arena. And you have 3 of the absolute blue bloods of college hockey in that arena. And secondary market ticket sales, I mean, if you bought tickets early for that one, you're probably going to pay for your kids' college with the way that those things are going. But again, that actually was an interesting dynamic too, because Omaha essentially knocked them out of going of having that opportunity, because Omaha gets into the tournament. They are the host of the South Dakota, the Sioux Falls, South Dakota Regional. And so it creates that whole dynamic. And now you've got three of the biggest programs in college hockey playing in the smallest arena we've had a regional. All of their own arenas are bigger than that arena. So you know, it's just, it's kind of nuts to see that, but it is the way that it shook out. But I don't want to harp on that too much. I know it's an interesting thing, but you know, the regional placement is what it is, and that's the way it goes. And you know, I think that I watched a lot of the women's college basketball, and they have their on-campus regionals, and those are pretty raucous environments. But I saw a lot of home teams coming out of those regionals as well. So there is that advantage. And certainly you can understand why there are some coaches that don't want to see that happen. But anyway, let's get into the actual tournament at hand. And we're going to start in Providence. I want to start with Boston College, and they'll play Michigan Tech in the first round. And this will be in the Providence region. You've got BC versus Michigan Tech, Wisconsin versus Quinnipiac. So really, if BC gets through Michigan Tech as we expect them to do, it's going to be a pretty tough regional final in that one, with the defending champion, then a Wisconsin team that was really rolling at various points of this season and has good goaltending. But, you know, let's keep it with BC. We've talked a little bit about it. You know, they've got, you know, bona fide Hobey Baker candidates and Will Smith and Cutter Gauthier. I mean, like, at this point, it's hard to see neither of them in the, you know, they'll both be in the Hobey hat trick. You would have to think, the way that they've played this year. We saw two teammates get in last year in that. But really, this BC team, those guys get a lot of the headlines. But I think this weekend also showcased the importance of Jacob Fowler. You mentioned it at the top. Goaltending is really, I think, the key for BC going on a deep run. And Jacob Fowler has that winning pedigree.
He absolutely does. I think he's their most important player, which it has been somewhat of a controversial thing to say, because Will Smith has 67 points and Perreault is almost 60 and Leonard's got almost 30 goals. But to me, like, Fowler's the guy where there wasn't much of a backup plan there. Meaning, like, okay, if Will Smith didn't come in and have a 70-point freshman year the way that he has, or almost 70 points, and the way that some of those other top picks have had, there's another layer there which can pick up some of the slack, whether it's Gauthier, or you have to think that not all three of those freshmen are going to come in and maybe have weaker freshman years than were expected. None of them have. They've all been fantastic. But if one of them did, there were other guys there to pick up the slack. There was no one there to pick up the slack if Jacob Fowler didn't have the type of freshman season that BC thought he was going to have. Their other goaltender is a freshman. So it was two freshmen. It was two guys that didn't have any playing experience at the NCAA level. But I think, and you hinted at it, Fowler is just a winner. I mean, he's won at every single level. You look at his numbers. Not only did he win the Clark Cup last year, but you look at his numbers in those playoffs, and it's like, I think he had a goals against of about 1.5 and a save percentage up in the 930s. In the biggest games of the year. So I think he's the most important player on that team, the most important freshman on that team, and I think he just wins. You know, on the biggest stage is when he seems to play his best hockey, which for someone in that position, that's what you want. He doesn't melt under the bright lights. It actually, I think, brings out the best in his game. So we saw that over the weekend. I mean, yeah, they kind of dismantled UMass and BU, had big advantages in those games, but look back to some of the big saves he made on the penalty kill both nights, which probably helped keep the momentum on BC side and not swing the other way. He's a big time goalie. He's a real big time. It's hard to, or easy to forget sometimes, that he is only a freshman because of the way that he plays.
Yeah, such maturity. And as you mentioned, I mean, last year, Clark Cup winning goaltender, you know, with the Youngstown Phantoms, and even he was in the 950s for most of the playoffs, which was just insane to watch. One of the greatest individual performances we've ever seen, and the Clark Cup MVP, the USHL Goalie of the Year. I mean, going into the draft last year, he was one of the most decorated goaltenders. And so you've got that. And, you know, you mentioned Will Smith's point total, and 67 points for a true freshman. And you look back, and we were talking, you know, 9 points over his last two games, which is just absolutely insane, in two playoff games where he just kind of took over. 67 points. The only freshman that was a U19 freshman, because Kyle Connor was a little bit older when he came into school, the only U19 freshman with more points in the last 30-plus years is Jack Eichel, who had 71, and actually Will Smith is scoring above his point per game rate this season at 1.81. It's more similar to Adam Fantilli last year. So when we look at that, I mean, how has that shifted the Hobie Baker conversation? Because I think we were all thinking it's Macklin Celebrini, it's Cutter Gauthier, and then it's probably, you know, Jackson Blake, you know, if they wanted to kind of spread it around the country a little bit more. But to see what has happened, I mean, Will Smith, how do you leave him out now? His resume is incredibly similar to those of the Hobie Baker winning freshman of the last few years.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And I'm not on the committee this year. I just finished a 3-year term on the committee. So I'm curious how that conference call is going to go. It's after the regionals. They have a conference call that debates the final 10, and then everybody sends in their vote. And that, you know, from that vote is where they get to the top three. Those get invited to the Frozen Four, and then there's the winner. There is no second vote, though. I think everybody sends in their top five, and it's the, you know, the top three get invited to the Frozen Four, and then the winner is chosen from that top 10 vote. There's no second round of voting once you only get to three. But it's going to be very interesting, because this is one of those years where sometimes I think you can get someone else that sneaks in. And this has happened with, you know, at times when North Dakota's had a couple of candidates or Minnesota's had a couple of candidates, where that vote can get split a little bit. And out here, if you've got Eastern-based voters, I think you could split the vote among a number of people: Smith, Gauthier, Perot and Leonard, right at the top of the list. Lane Hutson, I think, would also would also garner some votes. I don't even think Leonard actually is in the top 10, believe it or not. He's got 27 goals.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's a situation where there's going to be so many, and there are so many guys that are eligible for voting that are Eastern-based. It could split some of that vote, and I'm curious to see what happens. And that was a concern, I think, last year, you know, among Cooley and Fantilli was, would the committee members that are based in the West, would that split some of that vote, and would that boost someone like Elaine Hutson? I forget who the third finalist was last year, but there was, and when, at the time of the vote, you're just talking about the top 10, and there was, you wonder if that happens. It's going to be interesting to see who the Hobie hat trick is.
Yeah, it's I'm fascinated by it. I've never been part of that process, and you know, often, as you know, there have been a lot of debates about, you know, upperclassmen, and you know, you look at a guy like Colin Graf, and it's just like the numbers just don't they just don't stack up. There isn't an upperclassman that has a better resume than any of the freshmen or sophomores in this group. You know, maybe you say, oh well, are we going to throw a bone to a goalie? I don't think Kyle McClellan's save percentage is high enough to get into that conversation. It's really hard, the threshold for a goalie to win. But I mean, I think at this point, you know, I still think there's a real good opportunity for it to be an all Boston Hobie hat trick with, you know, with I think Celebrini has been, you can make the case for him. You can make a case for Hutson. You can make a case for Gauthier. You can make a case for Will Smith. And, you know, and Gabe Perreault not even in it, you know, so like that, nor is Leonard, as you mentioned. So, you know, it's going to be fascinating to watch these two groups. But I do want to talk about some of the other teams. I mean, BC is an absolute juggernaut. There's even more guys that we haven't talked about. You know, we could talk about Leonard and Perreault at length as well, but we're running short on time. And, you know, the interesting thing is, so Michigan Tech is going to be the team that gets in. Normally we see an Atlantic Hockey team as the default 16, but this year it's a CCHA team. It's Michigan Tech. They win the Mason Cup last week. They have a fifth-year goaltender in Blake Pietola, who is, you know, traditionally been one of the top goalies in college hockey. Numbers aren't as good this year, but he absolutely stood on his head in multiple games throughout their playoff run. He's the kind of goalie that could potentially steal a game, but is there anything more beyond that Michigan Tech can do to slow down this BC attack? I mean, it feels like Blake Pietola is going to have the game of his life if they're going to even have a chance.
Absolutely. I think that's their chance. You know, and they are a dangerous team. I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, had them as a top 15 team at the beginning of the year. Yep. They started really slow. I don't think they had a win until November. So they started really slow. But you look at what they've done really since the middle of January, especially the middle of February. They've only had two losses on their record since February 9th on a run to winning the CCHA. They are playing like the team that we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year. Not only is Pietola playing really well, he's got, I think, three shutouts in that stretch from the middle of February on. They're scoring a ton of goals again, which is what we thought they were going to be able to do at the beginning of the year. They didn't against Bemidji State in the CCHA final, ironically enough, but you look at the games before that, six against Bowling Green, five against Bowling Green, six against St. Thomas. They're starting to score in bunches a little bit too. So they are a dangerous team. This is a good hockey team. I think that they're better than where the pairwise had them, just because they were really punished by the relative strength of their league and also their poor start at the beginning of the year. But stopping Boston College, we saw the number two team in the pairwise have a hard time stopping Boston College over the weekend. So I don't know that anybody can stop this BC team down unless, like you said, Pietola just has the game of his life. That's really what they need. And that could happen. He's done that before, but that's really what they're going to need. I think they're going to need a 40-plus save performance from him to even have a chance.
Yeah, and he's certainly capable of it, but it is a lot to ask. And, you know, quite frankly, they're the elite shooters of this team. You know, Ryan Leonard and Cutter Gauthier, and then you've got the playmakers like Perreault and Smith who can score themselves. And then, you know, it's just so much. But, you know, Michigan Tech has a veteran group. They got a lot of good players, and they're running on a hot streak, and that can always be dangerous. They also do have to travel basically to BC's backyard, because this will be in Providence, Rhode Island, real short drive from Chestnut Hill. So on the other side of this bracket in Providence, you have Wisconsin and Quinnipiac, and Wisconsin is back, and Mike Hastings continues to win. They've got a really interesting team. They've got size. They've got some guys that can play. They've had one of the best goalies in the country, the only goalie in the Hobie top 10 in Kyle McClellan. And then you've got on the other side, the defending champion in Quinnipiac, where you've got Jacob Quillen back. You got Colin Graf. You got a lot of veteran guys, Sam Lipkin, that are going to make an impact for them. And they play a structure. However, both of these teams faltered in their conference tournaments. Wisconsin loses to Ohio State in the quarterfinals. Quinnipiac loses to St. Lawrence, gets shut out by Ben Cross, who just signed a free agent deal with the Dallas Stars, who are apparently signing all of the college free agents this year. And now, you know, you're kind of coming in limping a little bit. You have to think, though, both these teams are going to be ready. I mean, this is an interesting matchup, and one that I don't really know. I have a great handle on who really is the favorite in this one. What are your thoughts?
Neither do I. I think feels like a coin flip game to me for a couple of reasons. Like you said, both of them down the stretch didn't play their best hockey. Both got eliminated in Quinnipiac made it to the conference semifinals, but didn't play well in that loss to St. Lawrence. And Rand Pecknold talked about it after the game. And Wisconsin struggled down the stretch. And it wasn't just the playoffs against Ohio State. I think it even goes back a couple of weeks before that. They lost to Ohio State in a two-game series in the middle of February, which kind of started things a little bit for them. They had something with Ohio State. But that's kind of been the thing with Wisconsin. They're almost the opposite of Michigan Tech, where Michigan Tech started real slow and played well down the stretch. Wisconsin played their best hockey more towards the beginning of the year, probably through December, and then started to struggle a little bit once the calendar hit February. They play a similar style, too. I mean, as much as Wisconsin had some offensive firepower over the course of the year, Mike Hastings still wants to play a particular way. I think you've seen them defend a lot better over the course of the year. You look at McClellan's numbers, he's been a beneficiary of that for sure compared to what he was last year. And Quinnipiac tries to play the same way too, in terms of shutting guys down, really being strong in the middle of the rink. That's kind of where it starts, between the blue lines. So it feels like it's going to be a little bit of a fist fight, probably not a high scoring game, and two teams that play a similar style. So there's a couple of games in this tournament overall that feel like it can be a 50-50 coin flip, and this is one of them.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. And, you know, I think both coaches have such an interesting style, you know, in terms of how they get their teams to play, the structure that they play with, the different things. And, you know, Wisconsin does not have a single point per game score on their team. They've done it mostly by committee this year. They still have multiple players in double digit goals. So this is a team that has depth through their scoring. And really, like, you know, the shocking thing is they haven't gotten a lot of production out of Charlie Strammel, who's the first round draft pick on their team, and hasn't really played well. Where you know, it's been the transfers, and then also Cruz Lucius, David Cilia, you know, getting the guys that did stick around, Matthew D. St. Paul having a career year, and then Christian Fitzgerald, who I think is a really intriguing option as a potential college free agent. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be a really interesting matchup between two teams. And obviously Quinnipiac, with as a defending champion, you know, has plenty of those guys back. I'll be keeping a close eye on Jacob Quillen. He seemed to play his best hockey, you know, towards the end of last season, and he's been on another tear this year, a guy that, you know, NHL teams are certainly watching. So we will keep a close eye on that one. But we're going to move on. We're going to stay out east because I think it's just easier to move that way. We're going to stay with the Springfield Regional next, and that includes Denver playing UMass. We talked a little bit about that earlier. And then Maine and Cornell in another matchup that I'm really excited to watch. I think that one's going to be fascinating. But let's start with Denver and UMass. UMass got rolled over in the Hockey East quarterfinals, or semifinals rather. You know, they kind of seemingly backed in to this tournament a little bit. They were the last team in, narrowly defeated CC, and you can make the argument that CC had the better resume to the eye test. However, the math works in UMass's favor. They get in. They are basically a half an hour from their campus, and they get the reward they get is playing Denver, who just won the NCHC. I think it was the first time since 2018, which was a little bit surprising to like actually see on paper, where they actually won their conference tournament. But Denver, a perennial powerhouse, an offensive team, a team that's played some really good hockey down the stretch here. I mean, what do you make of this matchup? And certainly it seems like, you know, UMass should not be taken lightly in this one.
I don't think so. You know, I think they're obviously licking their wounds a little bit, but they've beaten some good teams over the course of the year. I know the big thing that was going around this past weekend, or especially on Sunday, was their record against the top 15. That's something I look at too. I look at not so much their record against the top 15, but kind of the raw data. And yeah, you know, UMass, they're 1-8-2 against top 15 teams this year. Denver is 11-7, and CC was about 500. That was the argument going on whether or not CC maybe arguably had the better resume. But I think that this is a Denver team that, for me, like as I kind of grade these teams out when I'm filling out my bracket, I think they're the second best team in the bracket behind Boston College, based on their performance against those top 15 teams. I know it's a little arbitrary. Some people pointed out, well, if you went to top 20, you know, UMass's numbers would have looked better. And that's true. I've always looked at every year, have looked at top 15 because, generally speaking, as you said too earlier, you get the Atlantic Hockey League has their automatic qualifier in as 16. And then the top 15 are kind of what we look at as those 15 teams would have made the tournament. Those are the top 15 teams in the country, regardless of whether or not they actually make it because of automatic qualifiers. So they've performed well against the best teams in the country. They've got 11, they've got the most wins of any team in that group against the top 15 teams in the country. And there are the other data that we have on them in those games looks good. They're plus 10 in goal differential. They're plus, I think, 80 in shot differential. Like they've not only have a winning record, but they've outplayed a number of these teams over the course of the tournament. So I think Denver's really strong. I personally have Denver coming out of the bracket. I think they're the second best team in the tournament behind Boston College. But again, kind of like with Michigan Tech, we know how good Michael Rabel can be at UMass. We've seen it over the course of the year. We started at the World Juniors. If he has a game like he has had at various points this year, a 45 save, one goal against performance isn't out of the question. It really isn't, because we're talking about some really high-end goaltenders on a number of these teams, and Harabal's one of them.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think goaltending is going to be really maybe the key to this matchup. And, you know, throughout the year, Denver, their team save percentage, .893. You know, and Matt Davis has kind of taken over the net. So he's made a difference there. He's 19-5-3 in his starts. And he was a guy that, you know, they kind of were going back and forth on between him and Freddie Hollick, and they decide to go, you know, Matt Davis down the stretch here, and he's kind of turned things around. The other thing that Denver has to be concerned about is we don't know for sure if Massimo Rizzo is going to play in the regional. He is, you know, he has averaged 1.57 points per game, which would put him tops on the team, 44 raw points, 28 games played. So he's missed, you know, a significant amount of time. And I, you know, at this point, we still don't know if he'll be cleared to go. I haven't seen any updates, unless I'm missing something. Meanwhile, they have Jack Devine, who's one of the nation's top goal scorers with 27 goals this year. He's a Hobie top 10 finalist. And then Zeev Bouyim, the draft eligible freshman, who has essentially outproduced what Lane Hutson did last year in terms of points per game for most of the season, one of the top scoring defensemen in college hockey as a freshman, really since the Brian Leetch, you know, so it's crazy to see that. But this is a team that has a ton of offensive weapons. Those guys alone are scary enough, especially if Rizzo is back. But I think that this is going to be an even matchup there. So really excited to see those two teams. But I do want to spend a little more time on Maine and Cornell, because Maine resurgent season, you know, tons of credit to Ben Barr. He brought in a high-end recruiting class. And even though they lost a recruit, you know, they tried to bring in Artem Duda, a Russian defenseman who played KHL games, and the NCAA shut that down. That was a weird process throughout that whole thing. However, Maine still had a lot of great players, and obviously the two guys that they brought in that were most important were the two guys out of the BCHL, Bradley Nadeau and Josh Nadeau, the brothers from Newfoundland. And these two guys are outstanding players in their own right, and have really led this resurgence season. But now they're going to go against the Cornell team that is heavy, that is defends well, that has a lot of size, that has a tremendous goaltender in Ian Shane. So, you know, there's a lot there in that matchup as well. But you've seen Maine a few times this year. I just wonder what your thoughts are after having watched Maine hockey for the last several years and now to see a resurgent season, and now they're back in the tournament as an at-large.
It's a lot of fun, first of all. You know, I think you look at the atmosphere that they had at TD Garden over the weekend for the Hockey East Finals. I think I joked that the state of Maine was there, and that's really what it was. Maine and North Dakota, when we talk about passionate fan bases, they might be one and two. When those teams are good, and Maine fans, you know, they didn't have a lot to be excited about over the last 10 years, but they've had a lot to be excited about with this team. And you can see the resurgence on the ice. You can really see it off the ice too, which I think is good for Hockey East. It's good for college hockey when fan bases like that are engaged. And again, did it with freshmen. We talked about freshmen right at the top of the show. You got the Nadeau brothers, two freshmen who are leading the way. I think to me, and I don't know what his prospects will be at the pro level, because he is, you know, a little undersized, but Lyndon Breen is the straw that stirs the drink, for lack of a better term, I think, for that main team. He does so many things well. He was playing with the Nadeau brothers for a while. He hasn't been recently, but I think his ability to play his two-way style of game allowed the Nadeau brothers to be a little more free with the puck, especially the beginning of the year. I think he kind of brought them along. I think Breen's just a fantastic college hockey player. Like, he's just that prototypical college hockey player. And then the most impressive thing with this Maine group, you look at their roster, they're at where they're at now. They've got 23 wins in the year, made to the hockey semifinals. They made the NCAA tournament. They don't have a senior defenseman. And we talk a lot about that experience being in college hockey sometimes with older players. Usually teams want that on the back end. They have no senior defenseman and only one junior. David Brazil's a junior. Everybody else on their back end, freshmen and sophomores, and they've been able to still win 23 games. That to me has been one of the more impressive things that hasn't been talked about, is the youth that they have on defense, and still those guys having a ton of success this year.
Yeah, I mean, really, really impressive overall. And the other thing that's been kind of interesting about Maine is we all expected Victor Osman to be one of the best goalies in the country, and it didn't happen. And they had to go to their freshman goalie, Alvin Boya, to take over. And he's taken over, and he's got a .916 save percentage, ends up now with a 10-6-1 record so far, and has been their go-to guy down the stretch here. And Osman came into the season as one of the top undrafted free agents in college hockey. And now it hasn't gone that well. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. And he was a guy that could have left last year, decided to stay for just this opportunity, and it hasn't necessarily gone well. But I do want to shift the focus to Cornell quickly too, because I think, you know, they win ECAC. They had to win to get in. You know, they had a good season for the most part, you know, a solid record, 21-6-6 record, but they still had to win ECAC to get into the national championship. They end up beating Dartmouth and then beating St. Lawrence in a tougher game, but they're now on a bit of a win streak here, 5 consecutive wins as they go into the tournament, so peaking at the right time. This is also a team that has, you know, a number of older players. Gabriel Seeger has been one of the top players for them this year. You know, we've seen younger players like Jonathan Castana really came alive in that ECAC tournament. So, you know, they've got some really real talent there throughout this lineup. There's a lot of interesting players throughout, but really Ian Shane is probably, you know, the key guy as well, a 922 save percentage. He's been a solid goalie for really as long as he's been a starter. So they are certainly not a pushover. And I think the way that they play is really going to give Maine some issues here.
I do too. I do too. Cause they're big. They're, I mean, it's a prototypical Cornell team. They're big, they're heavy, they're tough to play against, and they defend really hard. They've got two losses since December 2nd. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, you go back, we're talking 3 full months. They've lost 2 hockey games. Both were by 1 goal, and one of them was in overtime. So, you know, they're a couple of bounces away from being undefeated since early December. And in that stretch, they played 3 games with Arizona State, who was 20th in the pairwise. They played UMass, who obviously made the tournament. They played Quinnipiac. Like, yeah, the ECAC maybe wasn't as strong as the NCHC or Hockey East or the Big Ten, but they still had some good opponents in there over the course of that stretch, and only lost 2 games in 3 months. So, and really, to me, like, where they did it was with their defense and with their goaltending. You look at a lot of those scores, there's a lot of ones and zeros and a handful of twos in there. Not many games where they've allowed more than 2 goals this season. And that's where you look at Ian Shane's numbers as their goaltender, and that tells the story. I mean, 922 save percentage, 1.7 goals against. That's their game. Their game is just they can suffocate you. And that, to me, is where this game between Cornell and Maine is going to be decided. Can they find a way to suffocate, essentially, the Nadeau brothers? Can they find a way to keep them in check? Because not a lot of teams have been able to this year. You know, we're two freshmen with 40-plus points. We talked about the, you know, they almost get lost because of the numbers that the BC freshmen are putting up. But, you know, 45-point freshman years aren't that bad either. And they've got two guys in the Nadeau brothers that both have had those types of years. And it's going to be up to Cornell whether or not they can slow those guys down. And if there's a team that's built to do it, it's probably this team.
Yeah, I think that they're a legitimate threat. I do think Cornell is a legitimate threat to come out of there, you know, based on what we've seen is their structure. I mean, you look at what Mike Schaefer has done there over the years, and they are always structured and physical and hard to play against, and they can suffocate you, and that's exactly why I think that's going to be a team to watch, and they're a dark horse to come out of that region, I think, with the way that style of play. It's playoff hockey all the time at Cornell. All right, we're going to move over to Sioux Falls now, and this is where Boston University is at. So they travel across the country. They're going to play RIT. And people think I'm nuts for saying this, but I think RIT is a really good, you know, like, if Boston University isn't careful, they're dangerous. RIT is dangerous. They have enough senior scoring. They have or older guys that can score. Tommy Scarfone has been awesome in net for them. Is BU the better team? Absolutely. They have more offense. They have, you know, they have all the pieces. They have the skill level, and certainly as they have a lot of guys that have been in this position before. They played in the national tournament last year. RIT, first time back in the NCAA since 2016. Famously, the Atlantic Hockey team that went on a Cinderella run years prior in the Frozen Four. This is going to be an interesting one. However, I mean, The real focus of this game is going to be on Macklin Celebrini for the national audience. I'm sure that all of that's going to be. So I want to start there. We'll talk a little bit more about RIT, but I do want to start with the Celebrini because you've had a chance to see him this year. I've obviously watched him for a few years now. I mean, as far as freshmen go and the impact that he's had on Boston University, I mean, it feels Eichel-esque in terms of what we saw Jack Eichel do with a BU team that, you know, was – quite frankly, not as talented as this one, but still, I think this is just a remarkable freshman performance, no matter how you slice it.
Especially given the age, you know, given how young he is as a freshman, 17 years old. I mean, a lot of kids his age are seniors in high school, let alone playing in Hockey East and, you know, being one of the top players in college hockey. It's and the goal numbers, I feel like the point totals, again, get kind of lost because there's been so much attention on the BC freshman, and deservedly so with those guys. But all Celebrini's done is put up 59 points and 31 goals. I mean, he's right up there with Gauthier. He's one of the top goal scorers in college hockey as a 17-year-old. It's been a really special year. It's been a really special year. In any other season without the BC top line doing what they've done, he's a slam dunk no-brainer for the Hobie, in my opinion. And and may still end up winning it. I mean, you never know. He's right in that mix for sure. To me, you know, he's one of the top three. He'd be in my top three. But yeah, it's been a really, really special year for him. I mean, and I know from talking to a lot of NHL people who have watched him play this year, this just kind of, everybody knew he was the top prospect in the draft next year, but a couple of scouts that I've talked to recently said, you know, he went from, in their opinion, being the top prospect in the draft to the top prospect in the draft who's going to really have a special, special NHL career because of what he's been able to do against older, heavier guys this year.
I know. I've started to test this out on some of my friends in the scouting community, and I'm going to do it with our audience here. I think he's a lot closer to Connor Bedard than anybody realizes. Mm-hmm. I think that his all-around game, his ability to impact the game at both ends of the ice, his intense competitiveness, which I think is kind of built like his youthful look belies how fierce a competitor he is. He is constantly under duress in every game, and it does not matter. And then you look at what he's done this season and you see the, you know, basically you have to go back. So there aren't many guys that play in college hockey at 17. Craig Simpson at Michigan State was one of them way back in the mid 80s. So we're talking about almost 40 years ago when he was actually a sophomore at Michigan State, because he skipped grades in school. Like it's insane. But Celebrini's the highest scorer since then. So that we're talking about something that hasn't happened in 40 years in the college game with Macklin Celebrini. And you look at Fantilli, you look at Jack Eichel, they were late birth dates, so they were true freshmen. He is a younger than true freshman. And that to me is a big indicator of this is a very special player. And yes, Connor Bedard will always be the better goal scorer between the two of them. I think Macklin Celebrini has a chance to be as impactful over the course of his career in many different ways, maybe not on the score sheet. He might not win as many awards, but I think that Macklin Celebrini is the kind of guy that you are going to win. And I think Connor Bedard is too, that you will win Stanley Cups with. I think Macklin Celebrini has that kind of Jonathan Toews vibe of, and we forget how good Jonathan Toews was in his prime. But in his prime, he was a dude. And so like that is what I think Macklin Celebrini can be. And I just can't wait. But I do want to also talk a little bit about RIT. Of course, we have the Atlantic Hockey. And there's a number of other players on BU. Believe me, I know we're glancing over them. And I apologize to those many great Terriers. But we're shorter on time. And I want to make sure that we get a conversation in here about RIT, because this is a team that had some really nice non-conference wins over the course of the season. There are times where I felt that they were as good as anybody, you know, as anybody in the top 15, with the exception of the very top tier teams. I thought those teams in the back half of the top 15 RIT could hang with them. They have guys that have had big seasons. And then, as I mentioned, Tommy Scarfone, who's really played outstanding hockey down the stretch here. And been such a rock in net for them with a 928 save percentage. You've got Carter Wilkie as their leading scorer with 41 points, Cody Laskowski with 40 points as well. Three players over a point per game when you include graduate Elijah Gonsalves, who was awesome in the championship game. I mean, this is a team that if you're not careful with, they have enough to beat you. I just wonder, is there anywhere where BU is vulnerable where RIT could potentially pull the upset here?
Look, I think it is possible. And the reason is Scarfone is, we talk about goaltenders that can steal games. He's one of them. And you pointed out his numbers. He's got a 940 save percentage at 5-on-5. Like, that's off the charts. And their offense is spread out. Six guys with double-digit goals. Five players with more than 100 shots. They put a ton of pucks on net. They're going to test Matthew Caron. Matthew Caron's been very good down the stretch. He's been very good over the last couple of months. He's had points this year where he has struggled. And it hasn't been recently. I wouldn't even say it was this past weekend. I think, you know, that BC game notwithstanding, he's been good down the stretch. But if there's an off night there, and this is an RIT team that I think is sneaky good offensively, I've seen them play live a couple of times this year, they can put points on the board. They got plenty, and they put so many pucks at the net that they have. That's how they score. They just put a bunch of pucks on net, and they really, really test the opposing goaltender. I think they have a shot. This is also not an Atlantic Hockey team that is typically 40th in the pairwise, which is a lot of times what you see with those automatic qualifiers. They're in mid to low 30s or even in the 40s in the pairwise. This is an RIT team that's number 21. I mean, ahead of some other Hockey East teams. Yeah, yeah. They're ahead of UConn, who BU saw, you know, a number of times this year, ahead of Notre Dame, ahead of Penn State. If you told me if Notre Dame or Penn State made the tournament and were matched up against BU, I think we would say that they had a chance, right? And RIT's actually ahead of them in the pairwise. So this is not a typical, you know, number 45 Atlantic Hockey team that gets an automatic qualifier. They're basically a top 20 team with some depth and really, really good goaltending.
Yeah, I think that they're a legit threat more than people might realize for all the reasons you just mentioned. And even had, you know, they had a head win against Notre Dame, which is one of the toughest teams to score against. So really good there. On the other side of this bracket, we've got Minnesota, who's looking to avenge their championship loss from a year ago in the most stunning finishes for a Frozen Four game that I'd ever seen. And there have been a lot of them, so that's saying something. But they'll play against Omaha, and Omaha is technically the host for the Sioux Falls Regional. They have been on a bit of a roll too. They lost in the championship game of the NCHC final, Frozen Faceoff. They beat North Dakota 6-3. So no question, you've got an Omaha team that is going to be a challenge. Not a team that scores a lot, but they've gotten the goaltending this year, which has really helped them quite a bit. They've kind of split the net, but really it's been Simon Lacozzi who's been the guy. 912 save percentage. Isley did come in because of an injury, and he ends up beating North Dakota. March 9th was the last time he was in there, but so he's also very capable as well. But Simon Lacozzi is the sophomore that's really kind of taken things by storm. Over on the other side, Minnesota has been such a hard team to read this year because they have had some ups and some downs. And really at the beginning of the season, they had that overtime game against St. Thomas at the XL Energy Center, where you could kind of see some of the holes in their game. They lose to Michigan in the semifinal, despite having home ice in the Big Ten tournament. And so they're also kind of limping in a little bit. And, you know, they haven't had a ton of long stretches of wins. I think their longest win streak this year was 5 games. So this is a team that has struggled with consistency. So Mike, I just wonder, in this matchup, what are the things that stand out to you between these two teams? And we'll roll through these a little bit quicker here.
Yeah, I think Minnesota over the course of this whole year has really missed Brock Faber. I don't think we had any idea. We all knew he was a top-notch player. You know, it's probably going to win the Calder, but I don't think anyone really understood, unless you really watched a lot of Minnesota hockey, just the type of impact that he made for them in the D zone. Because to me, that's where Minnesota has struggled the most. Their defensive zone has been really lax at times, really leaky with pucks getting through to the slot, not being able to have good sticks in the middle of the ice and defending that inside area. That's where pucks have gotten, and that's what they've allowed pucks to get to, and that's when they've gotten into trouble. Justin Close, undersized goalie, but has played well. I actually think he's played a little bit better than his numbers indicate because of the fact that the D-zone coverage has been a little leaky at times. They can still score, still plenty of offense. I think, you know, the offense has cooled a little bit. Losing a guy like Cooley, you know, they just didn't have kind of that oomph, that one guy that they could go to and really lean on. And I know he's had a down year in comparison to last year, but Jimmy Snuggerud still has 21 goals as a sophomore, puts a ton of pucks on net. He's going to find his way to generate some offense, and they've got some other guys in there that have been able to do it. Pitlick, Snuggerud, Brodzinski, Nelson. They haven't been as dynamic offensively as they were a year ago. But I think for Minnesota, it starts in the D zone. They really got to make sure that they play well in their own end, because this is an Omaha team. Any team in this tournament could hurt you if you don't.
Yeah, three guys on last year's team that played in the NHL this year with from their blue line with, you know, obviously Faber threatening to win the Calder this year against Connor Bedard. But, you know, I think that this was a year that everybody kind of knew that Minnesota was going to have to reset. They had a really good recruiting class come in. A lot of their, you know, top, I think some of the guys have overperformed. Sam Renzel has been outstanding for them down the stretch. Oliver Moore has been a difference maker. You know, Snuggerud has had the down scoring year, but I think he's still, you know, played very well. So I think that's going to be a very tough matchup, and really another toss up for that one. But you're right. I think Minnesota, there's enough offensive depth there that I think that could really shift things. And as long as they kind of take care of their own end, they'll be all right. All right, we've got one more regional to get to. We're going to zoom through it a little bit because we already talked about the venue size, so we won't belabor the point on that anymore. But We've got Michigan State versus Western Michigan, North Dakota versus Michigan. So we've got some great, great matchups. I think the marquee matchup everybody's going to focus on is North Dakota, Michigan, because you got two of the biggest programs, lots of top prospects in that game. But Michigan State has really been one of the great stories of this season. The resurgence of Michigan State, first time we've seen him back in the tournament in quite some years. Adam Nightingale has really done a tremendous job there. They have a superstar freshman, Artem Levshinov. They've gotten big contributions from their transfers. They get a great goaltending performance from Trey Augustine. They win both the regular season and playoff title in the Big Ten. I mean, Adam Nightingale, coach of the year in the Big Ten, probably one of the maybe national coach of the year, the way things are going. It's been amazing to watch the Spartans this season. What have you thought when you've watched them?
I thought they're really dynamic up front, obviously, and on the back end. Augustine's been great. The one thing I think that they did a really good job of, though, too, was identifying the transfers that could help them not only on the ice, but kind of in the room, too. And I look at a guy like Reed Lepster, who won a national championship at UMass, and Jared DeMichael coached him there. He knows a lot about a guy like that. That's where they, I think, and this term is overused and I hesitate to even use it, but that's where they kind of went in and changed the culture of Michigan State hockey, was by bringing in some of those guys that have won, some of those guys that have led, gets some of that. It wears on you, right? If you're a fourth or fifth year player and you've been at Michigan State and you've never had a winning season, it could be hard to get that thing pushed in the right direction just from a mentality standpoint. They went out and brought in some guys that have won. They brought in some guys that have, I think, were a little desperate to win. A guy like Red Savage, who hasn't had a lot of success at Miami, and I think was looking for a chance to come in and be on a winner, and was a little desperate to do so. And I think playing with that desperation, when you bring in a guy who's a really good player who's played on a weaker program, you know, he has a little bit of a desperation to his game, which helps you kind of push that mentality forward. So they were really strategic in who they targeted. I think the guys they targeted were really good in the portal. And then, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, they've hit a couple of home runs for sure. Augustine maybe being the biggest one, but Levshinov not that far behind.
Yeah, I mean, getting Levshinov was a late commit last year. He's number two on my midseason draft list, and I don't think that there's going to be a ton of movement there. He's outproduced Owen Power in his freshman season by a considerable margin. He outproduced him in the USHL as well. I just think that he plays the game like it's easy. Like, it looks easy to him. He barely looks like he's breaking a sweat out there. it's fascinating to watch, but they're going to have, by being the number four, the fourth of the top seeds, they have the toughest first round matchup. They've got Western Michigan, which is a team that plays in the NCHC that's constantly getting beat up by a lot of good teams. Western has kind of stumbled a little bit more recently. They've only won three of their last nine, I believe, or three of their last eight. So that is, that is certainly not the way you want to come into the tournament, but this is going to be a team that has a lot of, talent. They have experience. They have transfers. They got Sam Colangelo out of Northeastern. They got Alex Bump, who was supposed to go to Vermont, ends up coming late in the process. Luke Granger has 47 points to lead that team this year. Dylan Wendt, a legitimate NCAA or NHL free agent. And then really maybe one of the biggest surprises, although his numbers have come back to earth a little bit, was the play of Cameron Rowe in net, who has been a bit of an inconsistent goalie throughout his career, but he's played every single minute a goalie has played for Western Michigan. He's played him this year. He has a .905 save percentage, which is a little bit, which is an improvement for him. So, I mean, congrats to Michigan State for the great season. This is going to be a tough one. You better come ready to play against Western Michigan team.
Yeah, I have Western graded as the best of the four seeds, which is they should, right? But I have them graded as in the top half of the bracket. If just looking again, you take the records out of it against those top 15 teams, you look at it and go, they're 6-8. Okay, well, that's a sub 500 record. There's other teams that are above 500 against those teams. But you just look at their data within those games. Plus 12 goal differential, almost plus 100 shot differential, and this is in 14 games. So some people don't like this number, but plus 13 in expected goals. Like, you look at the numbers by themselves and you go, wow, this team's probably, 14 games. You look at those numbers, I would have guessed they were 9-5, let's say, against the top 15 teams. And you look at the record, it's actually 6-8. But I think it just goes to show you how well they've performed in those games. When they're winning, they're winning by, considerable margins. And when they're losing, they're not losing by a lot, which means they're a tough team to play against, because It as it should be. They are the toughest of the fours. I wouldn't be necessarily – I have Michigan State coming out here, but I wouldn't be necessarily surprised at all if Western comes out of this game, maybe even comes out of this bracket if Roe plays to his potential. That's really what it hinges on for me. Roe needs to be at his best, as most of these goaltenders do. That's a common theme. But, you know, they grade out in terms of how they've played this year as a team that is as strong as some of the two seeds, in my opinion, in terms of how they've played.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, it's an incredibly well-coached team as well. I think Pat Furschweiler is probably one of the best coaches in college hockey, especially, you know, they don't have as many recruiting advantages. Jason Herter is, you know, one of the best recruiters in the country, but they don't have, beyond having a talented recruiter, you don't have as a ton of, you know, facilities advantages. You don't have certain things. But, you know, they basically sell, hey, you come play in the tough conference here, you're going to get better. And they every year have guys that are college free agents for a reason. But, you know, that's going to be a fascinating matchup. I can't wait for that one. But I think a lot of, you know, the casual college hockey fans are going to see Michigan versus North Dakota, and they're going to say, sign me up. I want to watch all of that. And it will be fun. I'm going to start with North Dakota because I think, you know, this is a team that had struggled for a couple of years and was kind of, it didn't feel like the North Dakota of old. And I think maybe the temperature was rising on the hot seat a little bit for Brad Berry because the standards are so high in Grand Forks. And even as a national championship winning coach, you know, you've got some pressure. Well, they've gotten some great performances this year. I think, you know, Ludwig Persson, who transferred out of Miami, has been good. He's been a little inconsistent in net down the stretch, but Jackson Blake has been a Hobie Baker candidate. I think before Will Smith went off, I would have probably had Jackson Blake in my Hobie hat trick. I don't know if that'll necessarily be true going forward, but he's got a point and a half per game, 59 points, 21 goals. They also have, you know, a talented senior in Reese Gaber, who I just love to watch play hockey. I think that he plays such a great game. They got a better than expected performance out of some of their freshman defensemen, especially Jake Livanavage, who's been a highly productive defenseman for them. I mean, this team just has depth and they beat you they can beat you. They're not the traditional North Dakota beat you up team. They're just going to compete with you, and they're going to have enough skill and speed to put the pressure on. So but clearly, I mean, having a guy like Jackson Blake that can take the game over has to help. So I just wonder your thoughts on North Dakota. I mean, they're back. They're absolutely back.
Yeah, they're back and they're deep too. I really like their depth. I like, like you said, Blake can take over a game. There's no question about it. But, you know, Berg also has 20 goals. You mentioned Gaber. He's almost at 20 goals himself. Even further down the depth chart, guys in their middle six, you know, Perron's got over 10 goals. Johannes has over 10 goals. They've got a lot of guys where that scoring has come from. It's come from the back end too. Like they can attack you in a number of ways. Which makes them really, really dangerous. And then on their back, I mean, I really like their back end, though. I think that's where it kind of starts. Livanavage is one that you mentioned. I think Garrett Pike's had a really good year for them. They're really experienced on that back end, too. Even some of the guys that aren't putting up a ton of points, a guy like Logan Britt, a guy like Keaton Pearson. I mean, they got so much experience back there. It reminds me a little bit of some of those teams that they had back in the mid-2000s that were really experienced on the back end. And not only could they score, but they could shut you down too. They've got a decor that I think is really good with their sticks in terms of shutting down plays, which makes life a little bit easier on their goaltenders. And when that situation's a little bit of in flux at the moment, Ludwig Pearson was hurt. It sounds like he might be able to play this weekend. I don't think we know yet. I don't think anything's come out, but you know, you're dealing with kind of a situation in flux there at the goaltending position with an injury to the guy who's been the primary starter. Hobie Hedquist has played fine when he's been in, but Pearson's been the primary starter. I think you lean a lot on that decor this weekend to try to shut down plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And another guy that really has been a great defender for them is Bennett Smolik, who transferred out of Bemidji State, and just he's made he blocks tons of shots. He's plays big minutes. He's going to get the toughest matchups, and that's what Michigan is going to have to contend with. And this Michigan team, they've been at times incredibly frustrating to watch, but they are incredibly fun to watch as well because they are extremely skilled, extremely talented. Goaltending has been an issue for them this year. They're 21-14-3. They were basically 500 in the Big Ten this year. But they have the Big Ten player of the year in Gavin Brindley, 51 points this year. Incredibly, Rucker McGroarty with 52 points despite missing five games this season. 0.58 points per game. Seamus Casey, one of the most productive defensemen in the country, in 45 points. I mean, they have five guys with 40 or more points, and Frank Nazar is right knocking on the door there. But then really, you know, Jake Barshefsky has been, you know, the guy that has been their starting goaltender. He's got a 907 save percentage. They defend okay. I just wonder, I think this is a tough matchup for them against a North Dakota team, as you mentioned, that defends so well. But sometimes Michigan can outscore their problems. Do you think they can do it again here, or what are the odds?
I think a lot falls on the goaltender. I think a lot falls on Barshefsky and whether or not, you know, he plays the way he has. And again, it's been so hot and cold over the course of the year. Really struggled at the beginning of the year. Has played better, you know, sort of in the middle, but it hasn't been real consistent. You know, I don't think he's really had a run this year where you're like, okay, you know, he looks like he's settled in as kind of a true number one. Maybe, you know, middle of January, right after the break. But aside from that, it's been hot or cold. There's been nights where, you know, he's made 40 saves or close to 40 saves. I think I could think back to a series against Penn State, shut out Notre Dame. And then there's been nights where, you know, at Minnesota, he gave up five goals on 18 shots in two periods and got pulled. So there just hasn't been a lot of consistency there. You don't really know what you're going to get. If the guy that shut out Notre Dame shows up, they'll be fine. You know, I think because they do have the horses that can outscore teams. There's no question about it. If there's some struggle there, you're going to rely on guys like Brindley and McGroarty and Casey and Hughes and Duke and Nazer to outscore North Dakota, which can be tough. Like I said, in what we talked about earlier, with how good their decor is, it can be tough to find space in the middle of the ice. I know they're skilled, but North Dakota is not going to give those guys a lot of time and space to operate. I don't know that there's anybody really in the Big Ten who plays defensively the way that North Dakota is going to play them this weekend. So that's going to be the thing. If Barshefsky can play his part and keep it to three goals or less, I think it's three goals or less. If they can keep it to three goals or less, Michigan, even against that North Dakota decor, should be able to find a way to score three or four. I mean, they're that talented. They scored 160 goals this year. Anything more than three, you're getting into a shootout, and that can get a little tough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be interesting. And I mean, just to think that Michigan was basically on the bubble for a while and then played their way off the bubble, you know, that gives them some motivation coming in. You know, they lost in a tough Big Ten championship game to Michigan State. But boy, that is going to be fun to watch. So that's the Maryland Heights region. And I mean, I can't wait for this tournament. I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. I think that the star power that we have, I think it's as many as 125 draft picks will be eligible to play in games during this tournament. And then you've got so many guys that are draft eligible. You've got the three best draft eligible prospects in the country. You've got so much to watch with this national tournament, which begins Thursday. It'll be all over on the ESPN family of networks. We'll be watching very closely. It is my favorite couch weekend of the year. I will not move. I purposely do not go to the regionals so that I can watch. You know, Maryland Heights is an easy drive for me. I'm like, nah, I want all the games. Give me all the games. And that's what I'm going to do. So I'll be sitting on my couch watching all of them. But Mike, before we get out of here, and before, you know, this is on the college hockey topic and it's just in the news, so I want to quickly talk about this. It's actually a pretty easy thing to talk about because I think it's one of those things where we don't know, but it was in the news because NHL had their GM meetings and the GMs discussed the potential of the NCAA allowing CHL players into college hockey. And there are a couple points of clarification. I saw that you tweet about this today that I think is important to bring up. But basically, you know, we've heard, obviously, our colleagues in the college hockey media have said, hey, this is not happening. We don't know that it's not happening. The coaches don't know that it's not happening. Nobody knows that it's not happening because it takes one lawsuit, and the mm-hmm. NCAA is losing all of them. So, Mike, just to quickly summarize, there is this idea that CHL players will be eligible for the NCAA. They are currently not. By rule, they are listed in the rule book. You cannot play if you play in the CHL. And because of NIL, because of transfer rules, because of everything, it's becoming increasingly harder to keep those players out. The coaches don't, I don't know, not every coach, but a lot of coaches don't want them to be eligible because it changes the whole landscape. This would be a seismic change to everything. So one day we'll have to break it all down. But just into the simplest terms, you know, why is this something we need to be aware of in your view?
So the way I understand it was the NCAA went to the coaches a year ago when they were in Naples for their annual conference and said, you know, we're looking to identify legal vulnerabilities in our rules because, as you said, they've lost every lawsuit they've ever had. They've lost them all. So one of them was the CHL rule, you know, with NIL, with Alston money, with the potential that Charlie Baker is talking about a new level of the NCAA where players are just going to be flat out paid. How can you say that a player in the OHL or Western League or Quebec League is not eligible? You really, I don't know that the basis for that argument exists anymore when college players are now being compensated. So the coaches, the majority of them, my understanding is, do not want it. And that has, I've had arguments with coaches about this where they say, you know, it's never going to pass. We're never going to vote. They're never going to have enough votes to make this change. That's fine. The coaches may not want it, and that may delay it. But as you said, and I completely agree, you're one lawsuit away, and this is what I've tried to explain to coaches, you're one lawsuit away from all of this changing. Because another thing the coaches didn't want unlimited transfers. I remember it happened in December. There was a lawsuit filed against the NCAA. An injunction was filed at about 10 a.m. on a Friday morning, and at 1:30, the NCAA said, we're no longer enforcing our transfer rules. All it takes is one lawsuit, one player to say that rule's illegal, it cost me a scholarship worth at a private school $300,000, maybe more. It could be a group of players. That's what I don't think people that at least the coaches, some of them, aren't grasping, is that this, I understand you don't want it, but it may be out of your control. And I know, and now it's at the point where, like you said, the NHL is starting to plan for it. There's going to be a big domino effect here if it were to ever happen in terms of how the CHL would prepare to try to retain its players, how the NHL would handle things from the NHL-CHL agreement and how they would handle drafted prospects. From an NCAA standpoint, I think it's very clear, at least to me, there's not going to be a negotiation with the CHL or even the NHL. The NCAA is just going to say, these players are eligible. They can enroll whenever they're eligible, whenever they're a college freshman, the same way players do out of the USHL. I think the CHL, the reports that come out about it being after their CHL careers are over, I think that's what the CHL would prefer, is that those players play through, from what I've been told, play through their 19-year-old season in the CHL. Right. And if they want to leave as a 20-year-old, that's fine. But, I mean, the NCAA is not going to say, oh, okay, we won't recruit your players until they're 20. They're just going to take players. Because they can. It's going to be up to the CHL to determine how do they keep their players as long as they can. It's going to be up to the NHL and the NHLPA to negotiate a new agreement with the CHL, figure out what they're going to do from a draft standpoint. If you have a drafted player that gets drafted out of the CHL and then goes to college. But that's what I've tried to tell people, is I know there might not be overwhelming support for it among the coaches. That might not matter, because there's other things coaches haven't had support for that have been instituted because of the courts. And that's where I think they'd have some vulnerability there. Is it ever goes to court, they're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, coaches love to control everything they can. And this is one thing they will not be able to control. And really, I think it's on those coaches to prepare and to be ready for this, because it is going to happen. And as you mentioned too, that's why the NHL talked about it. It's not, they would love to have a seat at the table. They would love to have some say in this. Sorry, ain't happening. It's not how it's going to work, because that's not the NCAA isn't going to be able to create a rule structure, and you're not going to be able to put rules on a different league. And so that's the thing where it's going to be really interesting. I think, you know, is there a way to find a happy medium? I guess. But as you said, I mean, I think it's going to come down to, okay, well, if you sign an NHL contract, you're not eligible to play in the NCAA. That's maybe the only stipulation you'd be able to put forth. And even then, who knows? So it is a fascinating thing. One day we'll talk about it again and talk about the ramifications of this, because there are so, so many ripples that this would create that would really, I think, alter forever the developmental structure of the sport, which is why the NHL wants to know, because it will have a massive effect on them, because it's their players that this will be happening to. And those decisions that are made below the NHL will ultimately affect the quality and the number of players that are available to the NHL pool. So it's going to be something fascinating. So that is a topic for another day. Let's keep the focus on the NCAA tournament. Let's enjoy the tournament this week. We'll solve all the problems this summer when we have to, and because I'm sure it'll be coming sooner than later, but we'll get to it there. But let's just enjoy it. And Mike, honestly, a huge pleasure for me to have you on the show. I think anybody that doesn't already follow you should be following you. You get tremendous news and have a great perspective on the game. And then on top of it, you know, you're able to inform us of all these different things with your in-depth reporting as well. Certainly, it's almost transfer season, so get ready for that. Get ready for the transfer portal and everything else. But let's just enjoy the hockey for a couple more weeks before we really have to dive into that stuff. But Mike, thanks so much for making time for us and joining us on the show this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is Mike McMahon. You can read his stuff on collegehockeyinsider.com and College Hockey News. Tremendous guests and a great segment, and really a pleasure to have him with us on the show. And a pleasure to have all of you joining us. It was a lot of fun to do. I hope that you guys enjoy watching the NCAA Men's Hockey Tournament. The road to the Frozen Four begins on Thursday. We will have complete coverage for you on flowhockey.tv. Make sure you are checking out all of the different analysis and pieces and information that you can find on Flow Hockey. And we will have that all coming up. And then we will talk next week. We'll recap what happened in the regionals. We'll talk about the Frozen Four and so much more as NCAA college free agency will be really kicking into high gear next week with many seasons ending this weekend. So lots and lots to talk about then. I want to give a huge shout out to Josh for producing today's show. I want to thank you all for listening and hope that you'll come on back. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and catch us on both YouTube and flowhockey.tv or via the Flow Sports app. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Talking Hockey Sense. I'm Chris Peters. We'll catch you next time.